Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join us, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. And if all this shop talk, all this politics was a little bit much for you, hang on until that 5 o'clock hour. It is our first day of Civic Media's Go for the Green and Gold Text to Win contest, spanning now beyond just the reaches of Wisconsin. We're in more states than just Wisco these days. We've got daily prizes. We've got a big grand prize worth more than $1,500. If you love the green and gold, you're going to want to stay tuned. All that coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. Right now, I've got my friend and yours, Professor Howard Schwaber from the University of Wisconsin, Madison. We're talking about why good data, good research, good science is not just essential for good government, but actually is also essential for having a reality-based ongoing political debate. It's very hard for us to engage in meaningful debate if we're experiencing two completely different factual environments. Have you ever had an argument with someone and they start talking about something and you have no idea what it is? You feel like you can't even find the beginning pieces of engagement? Well, we're sort of living in that moment for the right and the left. My thesis to you all fine listeners is simply this. The greatest volume of lying, destruction of independence, objectivity, good scientific method, good statistical and data analyses, that's coming from Donald Trump. And the reason why it's coming from Donald Trump and his cronies throughout the MAGA regime is because if he was honest, if his cronies were honest, if his executive branch agencies were honest and did good data analysis, objective science. Well, what we'd find is that Donald Trump can't keep a single one of his promises to the American people. That doesn't mean that his promises are actually being fulfilled. As Howard pointed out before the break, even if you ignore or distort or manipulate or lie about the empirical realities, that doesn't mean that you will escape the empirical consequences. And so for all of us, Republican, Democrats, independents, folks that don't like politics much at all, it matters when government stops its good faith efforts to get it right. And we saw one such abomination of government's core duties to protect the public health, safety, and welfare last week. The CDC's vaccine panel met. There are two things that I have found absolutely shocking, and I've got a couple of sounds, and I want to play them for you, and then I want to get your reactions, Howard. Let's talk about what's going on with what Donald Trump just announced about autism and Tylenol. We'll get into all of that. But the two things I want folks to hear when I play you some of the sound from the vaccine panel last week is the first is this. As a data scientist, and Howard, as a professor, you can say this as well. You do not take anecdotes or your own personal experience and assume that that speaks for the whole. It is like rule number one of data analysis. I'd also say that correlation is not causation. But let's just start with this very simple idea that anecdotes are not the way that broad, scientifically driven public health policies should be made. Changes are made slowly after reviewing mountains of evidence, largely driven by the consensus through peer-reviewed, analyzed, and replicable scientific data and studies. I want you to listen to what one of these RFK handpicked, didn't go through a vetting process, new vaccine panel appointees had, what they said during these meetings last week, because it was... Just shocking. Let's start with cut 40 and take a listen.
The way I think about it is, let's say that someone would guarantee us that the adherence would be the same. Let's just for the sake of discussion. It seems to me quite reasonable that most of us would think that the separate vaccines are better because there is some harm or adverse events that are being caused in excess. I think some of us maybe feel more kind of comfortable that they know and they understand that it's just like a local impact of that event, and some of us are more concerned. But I suspect that if we would somehow be guaranteed that all things are equal between these two options, the adherence is the same, I think the choice would be clear. So that kind of brings to me, in my mind, the discussion to what extent we believe that two separate doses are going to have materialistic impact on adherence. And I'm not fully convinced which option, which fact. We are all concerned on reduction in adherence to vaccines, but it's not clear to me that the fact that we see a reduction suggests that the reduction would come or would be affected by the fact that we separate these two vaccines for the first dose. In fact, I actually tend to believe more that safer and less adverse events are going to increase trust and adherence. So that, given that at the very best, I don't think we have good evidence either way, I would go with the option that seems to be safer, that also gives lower quantity of the antigen to the children. I think that that's something that makes sense to me.
Okay, just a couple things there, and then I'm going to give you another example of this exact phenomena. He's talking about whether or not it will be the case that fewer children will receive their full vaccination schedule if they require more shots. Okay, I'll just say this. You don't have to be a data scientist to understand that, especially for the most at-risk children, if they need to get more shots over a longer period of time, fewer of them will get the full vaccination schedule. That's human behavior. This guy's talking about his beliefs, and it seems, and oh yes, by the way, they have data that proves exactly what I'm talking about, which he is willfully ignoring in his comments. That was, by the way, Dr. Retsef Levi. He's a PhD. He's not a doctor. He's not a data scientist. Unbelievable. By the way, they did separate these out. This is the new standard. This is for the MMRV. Here's another one. This is where they explicitly talk about their own personal experience. This is Cut 41. Take a listen.
As far as practical experience is concerned, I'd like to echo comments of Dr. Mulhone. As a mother, it was often just commented as I came in with my children, it's time for their shots. And no additional description, VIS, the vaccine information statement, was given to me at times, not consistently every time, with the expectation, of course, that you read it when it's in hand, but not explained. I understand this may be a bias because I'm a physician. What could have been understood or expected that I understood this already. But I asked many of my patients and friends that are non-physician or not in the medical field, and they had a very similar experience almost across the board. And this is, of course, anecdotal.
Let's just wrap it there because she goes on. Your experience and your friend's experience is not relevant to public health policy decisions. That was Dr. Evelyn Griffin. By the way, she's an obstetrician and gynecologist, has no experience in immunology or epidemiology. Howard, I know that it's a little wordy and they're kind of talking around things and everybody's being super polite in these meetings. But that's insane when it comes to public policy. You don't use anecdotes to craft public health policy.
Well, so first of all, in my line of business, there's a saying the plural of anecdote is not anecdata, which is my favorite formulation of that particular point. On the other hand, I also use to practice law, and the converse is sometimes the singular of anecdote is testimony. So there are two competing models of how to get information. I do think it matters how whether we're following good practices about informing patients and parents. I think it matters if we're doing good, if our forms are readable. I mean, I think all those things matter.
Right.
But they're secondary to the core question of what is the medically effective method of vaccination. I'm not a doctor, but my understanding is that from the medical literature, there's a strong and well-established reason for the two separate doses. And you then approach the questions of behavior and packaging and informing in a way to achieve that goal. These guys are reversing that order. One way to think about it is, instead of saying, here's the product people need, let's figure out how to advertise it so they'll buy it, They're saying, let's figure out what advertisements will work and make the product that fits that advertisement. You can think of it that way. It's a reverse reasoning. And it comes from that same thing we were talking about before, which is a kind of, well, it doesn't matter all that much what the product is at the end of the day anyway. And that's the part that's alarming and upsetting. You know, an obstetrician, a doctor, a PhD, these are all people with training, but they're not trained in the particular area of, as far as I know, health public policy, which is a specialized area, any more than I am, for that matter. I would never think to try and advise them on medicine. Regardless, what jumps out at me is that the anecdotal stuff is really useful figuring out how to sell the thing. It's really useless in determining what the product ought to be. And they're putting the cart in front of the horse in that very, very fundamental way.
Yeah, it was, as a data scientist, I was shocked by what I was hearing in these meetings. As someone who worked with public health experts as the chief legal officer of Milwaukee County through the COVID-19 pandemic, I was shocked to hear what was being said. And repeatedly, this vaccine panel has what they call other interest group liaisons. So it's like the American Association of Pediatrics, the American Physicians, on and on and on, these big organizations. These particular liaisons, multiple times during the meetings on Thursday and Friday, when they eventually would be called on, pointed out more times than I care to count that they should be crafting the vaccine schedule for children based on broad-based studies, based on the consensus in scientific literature, not based on anecdotes. They talked about that all the time, what the policy should be and the communication strategy as a separate issue, exactly what your point is, Howard.
Secondary issue, separate and secondary.
And it was, you could hear the frustration in other subject matter experts' voices as they were trying to say, you should know better than to do it this way. The last point I want to make about the CDC vaccine panels last week that I found equally concerning, but for a different reason. On Thursday, if you were in the weeds on this at all, that vaccine panel actually adopted conflicting guidance. Their first vote said we have to separate the measles, mumps, rubella, and chickenpox vaccine for the purposes of basically private insurance. Now, interesting to note, these industry organizations and insurance organizations have said they're going to cover them as a joint vaccination as well. But the second vote that they took said, no, they have to be combined. We're going to keep the coverage going for low-income people for a combined vaccine. And it was evident in that discussion that people did not understand what they actually were voting for. So not only are these people not really subject matter experts, not only do they not know that anecdotes should not form broad-reaching public health policy, they were so novice that they couldn't even run the meeting so that everybody knew what they were voting for. This is what we've got under Donald Trump. We've got Howard, though, and me, Maggie Dawn, here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. We discuss implications next.